Ludmila Rutarova was 87 years old when Dagmar Grazlova interviewed her for us in 2007. She was born in Prague, she passed away in Prague, and the only time she lived outside of her city was when the Germans sent her and her family into Nazi hell. To Terezin, to Auschwitz, to Bergen-Belsen. What makes Ludmila's story especially interesting is that when she and her family were deported from Terezin to Auschwitz-Birkenau, they were sent to what is known as the Czech family camp. Thousands of Czech Jews were kept alive there, in Birkenau, in sight of the gas chambers and the crematoria, for months. They were told to write postcards home to their family to say that they were in good health. And then later, almost all of them were murdered. Ludmila and her mother were instead sent on a work detail, and these are excerpts from her interview. Her story is read for us by Jenny Barnett in England.
I was born in Prague in 1920, and my brother Joseph, or Pepik, came along 2 years later. We lived near the Palacky Bridge, and my parents had a general food store. After the Germans came, we had to close the store and move into one tiny room. When I was growing up, we were a secular family. We observed Christmas, we had a tree, we didn't cook kosher, but we observed Passover and had a Seder. And some traditions die hard. I remember once I was given some ham to eat and my mother put it right back. "We don't eat that," she said. Okay, so this isn't unusual. But where did she tell me this? When the British liberated us in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp in 1945 and we were starving. But I've gotten ahead of myself. Back when I was young, I was crazy for Sokol. Most people don't know about such things now, but picture a giant football stadium with thousands, not hundreds, of children all doing coordinated gymnastics. Soccer was huge in our country and I loved it. Until the Germans came in 1939 and they threw me out for being a Jew. That is when my parents lost their store, so I had to go and work in someone else's store until they threw me out of that too. My brother Pepik had his heart set on a business academy, but, well, I think you understand. When the Germans came, we had to turn in everything we owned. Pepik was supposed to hand in his motorcycle, but he gave it to some friends who hid it in their cellar. I was supposed to hand in my skis and ski boots, so I hid them with a girlfriend. Our neighbour hid my typewriter for me. Pepik was on one of the first transports to Terezin at the end of 1941. My parents and I waited, living with such anxiety, knowing we would be called. We went on a transport in April 1942. I was 22 when we arrived. The entire time I was in Terezin, I worked in agriculture. We assembled each morning, walk outside of the ghetto to hoe carrots, thin our beets, cultivate tomatoes, shuck beans and all sorts of other things. In the winter, we made straw mats for greenhouses. Compared to all that would come after Terezin, what we had there was not so terrible. When the weather was hot, we picked apples, pears, and I can't remember what else. When it was cherry season, we used to go up on the ramparts to chase away the starlings. In the evenings, I was in a choir and I sang for Raphael Schechter, a conductor. He had a piano in one of the cellars. We sang the Barton Bride by Smetana, and later we sang Verdi's Requiem. The first performance was in January 1942, and there were over 100 of us in that cellar. Schechter organised us by voice, and someone would sit there and write our parts for us. Then there were the deportations, so our choir got smaller and smaller until May 1944, my parents, my brother and me all were sent to Auschwitz. Schechter was not far behind us. The Czech family camp. When our train stopped in Auschwitz, it was already dark and we could hear them bellowing, "Raus! Raus!" The Poles there were very cruel and beat us with sticks. But this one Pole walked along with us who told us that if any of us knew how to write well, we'd have it good in Auschwitz. Several girls worked as so-called Schreiber, as office assistants, and each block had one Schreiber. In Auschwitz, they tattooed us and I got number A4603. They put me to work in a block to look out for the smallest children, about 3 or 4 years old. I played with them, told them poems, and sang with them. When the weather was nice, I'd play with them outside in front of the block. Not one of those children I was caring for survived. For 6 months, the Germans kept everyone in the Czech family camp alive. They even let families stay together. Then during the night from the 8th to the 9th of March in 1944, they gassed almost the entire group. But I was selected to go to a forced labour detail. They even took my mother, who was 48 but looked young and fit. Dad was already 65. We all knew what that meant. Dad was calming me down as I stood there sobbing and he said, "I've got my life behind me, you've got yours ahead of you. I'm glad that you're going with Mum." At dawn, we were arriving somewhere. It was still half light, but I glimpsed a huge dark mountain beside me. I looked more carefully and realised that they were shoes, a huge mountain of shoes. We'd arrived in Bergen-Belsen. The conditions in Bergen-Belsen were catastrophic, horrible. We lay on the floor like sardines next to each other. That's where we were when we were liberated on the 15th of April 1945 by the British Army. After liberation, the English distributed canned pork. Like I told you before, my mother took it from me, told me that we won't eat that, and allowed me to eat only crackers and powdered milk. I weighed about 42 kilos then. That's how gaunt I was. Gradually, I got better, and my mother and I left Bergen-Belsen for home in July 1945. We travelled for days by train. We arrived back in Prague at the Smíchov train station. We phoned a neighbour who rushed over in a car to collect us. When we were driving through our neighbourhood, everyone was shouting and cheering. Mrs. Schneidovera called out, "Your typewriter is at our place." Someone else yelled out about my skis and someone said Pepik needed to come get his motorcycle. But where was Pepik? Our friend Vlasta took a car and drove up to Terezin just to look for him. She was going through the infirmary and this really sick old man called out to her, "Vlasta!" She walked over to him and said, "How can I help you?" And he said, "It's me, Pepik." She was shocked. He looked like his own grandfather, but he was alive. Of our entire family, that was it. Pepik, me, my mum, no one else. In Prague, I ran into Carol Reuter, and Carol was the very first person I met in Terezin back in 1942. Carol and I had a coffee together and told each other about the hell we had lived through. One thing led to another, and Carol and I were married in 1946. I moved in with him. I'm still in that flat today. In 1947, we had a daughter. 2 years later, we had a son. Carol and I both worked. I had several good jobs in large firms and Carol worked in the food service industry. But then starting in 1964, our luck ran out. Mother died in 1964 and Carol died of leukemia not long after. He was just 49 and I was left to raise 2 children. In 1968, my brother Pepik immigrated with his family to America. That brought me a few interviews with the police, of course. When my children were still young, In the early 1960s, I decided to have that Auschwitz tattoo removed from my arm. Why? Because in summer, when I would take the kids on the train out to the country, I would wear short sleeve dresses. I often noticed people looking at my forearm and then whisper to each other. Sometimes they would walk over to me and start saying how terribly sorry they were for me. Well, I don't want anyone's pity. I arrived at the dermatology ward and the doctor asked me what was ailing me. I told her that I'd like to have a tattoo removed. She looked at me with an annoyed expression and began berating me. And why did you get a tattoo in the first place? You could have realised that one day you'll change your mind. And now all you're doing is making more work for me. So I told her that I hadn't exactly been overly enthused about getting this tattoo. And if I'd had a choice, I would definitely not have gotten one. Then I rolled up my sleeve. The doctor immediately did an about-turn and began to apologise profusely. The poor thing had had no idea of what sort of tattoo it was, and I said, "Well, it's OK. Can we proceed?" A few years ago, I decided to go to Auschwitz-Birkenau with my son, just to have a look. Basically, there are only chimneys left behind in Birkenau, where the Czech family camp was. I wanted to show him where I'd lived. Then I told him that I wanted to show him the latrines. He said, "Seriously, Mum?" I said, "You'll see." So I went into the latrines and told him that just before my mother and I left on that transport for Hamburg, Dad put into my hand a beautiful diamond brooch. He said I could keep it as a keepsake or trade it for something. I took it from him, I cried, and then I walked into the latrines. I knew the Germans would search me, I knew they'd find it, so I went into the latrine and dropped it in. And I led my son to that same latrine. We looked down at it, we both sighed, and I said some words about my father, and we walked out.